And just thinking about how you got the jobs from people, how people came to you to approach you with jobs, was it just on a sort of an ad hoc basis? People would say, "Oh, this needs to be painted," or "You need this bit of steel needs a bit of work on it," or did you have sort of work plans?
I don't know who organised the actual workload, but it came used to come through as a memo that we would be working on such and such a job, and this would be planned. I mean, with the gangway, obviously, that I think we did two big gangways down there, which was the full length of the machine shop, and with that, of course, it had to be planned both with us putting the gangway down and also making certain that the rest of the factory was available on. The rest of the machine shop was available for normal working. And also, of course, with ready mix coming in to actually give us the concrete to get down quickly for the next stage, you know, type of thing.
And were you the people that liaised with people in the heavy machine shop and liaised with the concrete people? You set all of that up as part of the maintenance team?
Not really. I can't think of the gentleman's name I worked with, who was a qualified bricklayer. I've got a feeling he tended to be, shall we say, the foreman, if you like, in charge of the four of us. And I think basically the memo would come down to him and it would all be discussed and then we'd just go in accordingly, you know.
Thinking about this guy whose name you can't remember, and Ron as well, did you have good working relationships with them?
Yeah, they were great. They were a lovely team to work with, and lots of laughs. It was great working as a team together, and working in the factory was really good. And it was only that some various circumstances that I actually had the opportunity of going back out into my trade again that I left.
Do you remember some of those laughs that you had with the team?
Yes, well, of course, the one in particular was on the Christmas Eve, of course, when in actual fact they were all expecting to shut down. Officially, we shut down at 5 o'clock, but Christmas Eve it was known that they would be shutting down early. And, of course, there was a Christmas lunch break, and, of course, people would tend to disappear into the pub round the corner and have a drink and then come back. And, of course, it meant that the factory knew what had gone on as far as one or two of the men were concerned. And, of course, in reality, there wouldn't be any machining done by that time of the day, I am pretty certain. But, in fact, they didn't shut down at dinner time. They had to come back and clock in again. And then they clocked in, and then within about an hour, the whistle went, and we all finished early on the afternoon, ready to leave. So it was a pre-gone conclusion that, in fact, yes, we didn't finish at dinner time, but it wouldn't be long after. And on one occasion, the other three guys, Ron, this West Indian guy, invited us, the four of us, over to his place, where he lived just across Southcote Street, to have a drink with him. And I decided I needed to get back with my family and get ready for Christmas, my children. And I didn't go, but the other two went over with him. And it was on the Boxing Day. I was riding down Southcote Street and saw him and stopped. And I said, "Do you have a good Christmas, Ron?" He said, "Well, I don't remember much of it, actually." He said, "We went over," he said, "they came over," and he said, "I had some white Jamaican rum, which they rather enjoyed." He said, "I quite enjoyed it," he said, "and the last thing I passed out," he said, "and it's only Boxing Day morning," he said, "I'm fully aware of what Christmas would have been."
That's fantastic. Did you tend to socialise just with the four of you from the maintenance team, or did you socialise with anyone else from around the factory?
No, you tended to be, we didn't really socialise outside the factory, but we did tend to work as a very, very good group together and have a lot of banter together. But obviously, the staff in the factory in that, not so much in the offices, but in the factory itself, obviously there was an interaction there and there were many a laugh on many an occasion.
Did you ever have cause to go into the canteen and sort of sit and eat in there, or was it mainly in the hut?
No, we tended not to use the canteen, although we could have done. We tended not to use the canteen. We tended to more or less go in the hut and get warmed up if necessary and have our sandwiches and a drink in there.
So you had a nice little electric fire in there as well?
Yeah, there was something like that.
Or something a little bit more liquid to keep you warm, eh? Thinking about other areas of the works that you would have seen and that you would have used in a way that perhaps people that worked in the heavy machine shop or the drawing office wouldn't have used. You mentioned the turbine house, and this would have generated power for the rest of the factory. Do you remember what that house was like?
The turbine house itself actually produced or enhanced power into the heavy machine shop, not in the main factory. And that was the main cable that was running from that. It was actually in the heavy machine shop itself on the side alongside the main entrance into the factory. I remember looking through the windows into the turbine house, and in fact, on one occasion, we did have to paint in there. But looking through the window, you see this massive turbine, and it seemed to be half sunk into the floor, although it was in a pit in the floor. But so you could actually see the turbine there in that actual building. As I say, there were occasions, one occasion when we did have to paint in there, where of course it was shut down while we were working in there, you know, just to tidy it up. But yes, it was a massive thing in a massive room of its own, alongside the actual main heavy machine shop.
And you say massive, but in terms of feet, how many feet wide and high would that have been?
If you were standing in the heavy machine shop, you could look over it. The length of it, I have no idea at all. I mean, it went down, I think, about half the length of the heavy machine shop. So there was or the room went down about half the length of the heavy machine shop. So it was quite a big thing in actual fact.
And was it noisy as well?
No, not really. I don't remember it being, no, certainly not noisy. You know, you had the noise from the factory, from the heavy machine shop, obviously. But I wasn't aware of it being excessive in that respect.
And you said it generated power for the heavy machine shop. How was the rest of the factory powered?
Well, obviously, they had their substation throughout the factory. And I just got the feeling this turbine house may have been the one to boost the power for the bigger machines in the heavy machine shop. But there were substations around in the factory itself. I've got a feeling there was one off Lantoni Road. As you came in from the Spa Lights into Lantoni Road, you turned left and went into that side of Fieldings, and I've got a feeling there was a substation there.
And thinking about other areas, the works that you perhaps would have used, was there a store of paint or materials that you would have used in order to maintain the buildings? Where would you have got that material from?
That would be brought in on demand, so we'd have that in our shed. As required. It wasn't a question of a massive store. I'm not aware that their store actually stored our materials. They might have done, but I'm not aware of that. The other thing I do remember is that off Baker Street, on the entrance into the heavy machine shop from that side, a little bit further along Baker Street, there was a woodworking shop which actually worked for the woodworking for the factory itself. I don't know whether it might have been crates, it might have been lots of other things they made. And as I say, that was off Baker Street itself. And there was one occasion where they had a fire there, where in fact that some welding had been done on the Saturday morning, and it's believed that something had smouldered, and by Saturday afternoon, part of the woodworking shop had actually gone up in smoke. But it was only a very small place, almost like a large hut, I think, on the side of the actual factory there, you know, type of thing. But that was where the woodworking shop was for anything they needed to produce in wood, you know, type of thing.
So that might have been where they'd stored their wooden patterns, potentially.
Yes.
That might be why they no longer exist.
I think so, yeah. I don't know what they made there other than general woodworking, you know. But, I think that there was a big wood store there as well, you know. But I remember it as you came up Baker Street, you saw it at an angle facing you as you came up the street. And of course, beyond that then was West Midland Farmers. You
know. And thinking about other areas of the works that you perhaps would have known and used that perhaps other people wouldn't remember, can you think of any unusual areas that you would have gone to and seen that others wouldn't?
No, I don't think so. I think the main part of the factory is what we worked with, and that's all my memories can resurrect, to be honest.
And of the areas that you remember, did they have certain smells, certain sounds, certain sights that you really remember, that you can recall, and what were those like?
Yeah, of course there was the oil and that in the factory and of the machines, and of course there was the noise, a tremendous noise in the heavy machine shop, especially when they were doing very large jobs in there. The crane, of course, when that was running, of course, that could be quite noisy, and the lady driving the overhead crane, she actually was absolutely brilliant. My father always maintained she could put anything on a sixpence if she wanted to, and she had full control of the crane overhead. She'd worked there since the war, and she was considered by my father, one of the best crane drivers he'd ever worked with. And she also taught other crane drivers, not just on the overhead crane, but on the other cranes as well.
I want to get on to talking about Mary and your story of her in a second. Yeah, just as a final question about the sights and the sounds of the works. A lot of the photos that we've got, in fact, all of the photos that we've got, are black and white. So we don't really know very much about what the colours of Fielding and Platt were like. What colours would you have been painting in when you painted the offices or did the painting for Fielding's?
It would be the standard cream and green in most cases, I think. And, I would say it was pretty average colour, cream and green, or unless somebody wanted an office. They certainly weren't done in salmon pink or anything like that.
And would you have painted the machines at all or anything like that, or would that have been the people actually fitting them and putting them together?
Yeah, we wouldn't touch the machines at all on that basis.
Thank you. We were talking about Mary, and you had a lovely story of her skill in transporting, in moving a piece of machinery. Could you just tell us about that?
Yes, well, in Fielding's, in the heavy machine shop, there were two pits. One was the standard pit and one was a very deep pit. Now, in the deep pit on this particular occasion, they had a very large job, one of the biggest they'd ever produced in the pit. And they came to the point where it had to be offloaded or taken off and put onto a bogie to be taken over into Wales. Now, the railway tracks that came from the park came up alongside Fielding and Platt's and went through to the docks, but they also came into the heavy machine shop from Baker Street side. They brought in a low loader, a motorised low loader, to come in to actually take this load and put it on and have it put onto the loader to be taken away. They lifted up the job out of the big pit, having removed the guardrails from the side so it could clear the ground. Everything on the path between that and the railway line in the side of the shop was cleared away, and this lorry with its low-loader trailer was brought in, and it was actually then put in position ready to take this load. When Mary got the actual job alongside the lorry, it was too high to actually put this job on. And so what they had to do then, decided to do then, was to bring a railway low loader in because it was fractionally lower. So that lorry was taken out and the railway vehicle was brought in. And they brought it up to the side of this vehicle again, and they were still literally a couple of inches too low to actually get it on. But Mary, with a little bit of jiggling and a little bit of tipping here and there, she managed to get the edge of it onto the loader and then gently slide it across onto the vehicle. Once it was on the vehicle, of course, then they brought the railway trailer, out of the factory and brought it up into Baker Street. From there, it had to be then transferred back onto the road vehicle in order to be taken down to Westcote Bridge. It was lifted by crane onto this vehicle and it was driven down to Westcote Bridge. Now, because of the weight restrictions on Westcote Bridge, it then had to be transferred back onto the railway, the loader, to be taken across over the River Severn and to the other side of the River Severn to again be offloaded again back onto the road vehicle to be taken into Wales. But her handling of this actual job, putting it onto that railway low loader, was absolutely incredible. And everybody was stood right away from that part of the factory. And she actually watched, and it was like watching a piece of music as she put that onto the trailer.
And you actually saw this yourself firsthand?
Actually saw that at the time, and it was incredible how she actually did it. It was absolutely incredible.
Were there many other people watching it? It seems like it was quite a spectacle.
Well, there were several came in out of the office, but generally speaking, it was mainly the staff, or the men working in the actual heavy machine shop that saw it. But obviously, they were VIPs came out of the office and all the rest of it to see it.
And did she get a round of applause at the end of it? Seems like she would have deserved it.
Well, she certainly got a whole load of cheers and well done, Mary, and that type of thing.
Everyone that I've spoken to that remembers Mary always remembers her fondly and always remembers her skill. You said that you knew her personally, did you?
No, not personally, but of course the business with the doing the gangways and that. When I came back to Gloucester, just after I came back to live in Gloucester, I saw that she'd retired and there was a big article in the Citizen about it. And I wrote to her saying what Dad had always said about her. I wrote to her personally, or wrote in the paper to her about what Dad had said about her being one of the best train drivers that he ever worked with. And I also related to the incident with the gangway and trying to rip up the main cable. And she actually wrote to me afterwards personally and thanked me for my comments and also said that she remembered the incident when we were ripping up the gangways in Fieldings.
And when would that have been that she retired?
I moved back to Gloucester in 85, so it was sometime after that, but I am not sure, I can't remember. I do intend to try and find these cuttings, and in which case I will pass them back to you, or copy it to you.
That would be lovely. So, roughly, how old would Mary have been when you saw her move that heavy piece of machinery?
Well, I gather she was there. She worked for Fieldings in the war, and in actual fact, I was there in 62. So you're putting another 20 plus years on. Difficult. She was a very difficult person to get her age. In actual fact. When she's dressed in dungarees and all the rest of it, you're not the person you would see in socially outside afterwards. So it was very difficult to actually judge how old she was. But I know that she worked there during the wartime, and in fact she'd worked there ever since, and it was 62 when I was there.
And I guess it's hard to see how old someone looks when they're 30 feet up in the air driving a crane as well.
Yes, well, we did see her on the ground floor as well, but as I say, memories are getting dim.